Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is December 6th, 2015, and this is episode 99. Episode 99, Partners in Game. Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we are completing our Ninty 90s by looking at some of our favorite Nintendo subsidiaries and partner studios. You sound sad, Slaggy.
No, just that the Ninty 90s have been fun, and, you know, it's going to be sad to send it off.
Well, maybe in the future, we can do some more themed episode groupings. However, we have some stuff to talk about, so let's buckle in and get ready for that. Slaggy, you want to kick us off with our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits?
Yes, first in our follow-ups, we have word from Blizzard that as of December 10th, they'll be taking an extended period of offline time for the Overwatch beta, and this is just so that they can make improvements to the core game and work on some features like the spectating and progression features of the game. And they say expect it to return in mid to late January. And Blizzard, if you're listening, I'd like a beta key, please.
Oh, that's right. You haven't played it.
I have not played it.
I played it during that beta weekend. Man, it was fun. I actually liked it a lot more than I expected to.
Good for you.
We also have word here that Koei Tecmo has finally officially responded to the Dead or Alive Extreme 3 controversy. Unfortunately, this is sort of almost like a no answer. Their official statement goes as follows. The comments recently made by an employee regarding Dead or Alive Extreme 3 on the official Dead or Alive Facebook page only reflect that individual's opinion and not the opinion or business strategy of Koei Tecmo Games. We remain focused on delivering the best in fighting entertainment to our fans around the world while consciously respecting and strategizing to support the different global audiences the Dead or Alive franchise lends itself to. Dead or Alive Extreme 3 remains in development and is still planned for release in Japan and Asia only. So, TLDR here, Koei Tecmo is distancing themselves from accusations that any one particular group is responsible for DOA X3 not releasing abroad, while doubling down on, you know, the game, only presently being planned for release in Japan and Asia.
Yeah, despite it being a non-answer, I think it was pretty professionally worded. I mean, you know, it's definitely...
This should have been the statement that was made to begin with.
Well, yeah, I mean, it may be a little evasive, but, you know, I think that it's a pretty good CYA.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We also have word here that the Shovel Knight amiibo will be releasing in Europe starting December 11th. And the North American release will be January 8th. In case you have forgotten, the Shovel Knight amiibo will unlock additional modes, customization options, and bonuses to both the 3DS and Wii U versions of Shovel Knight, woo-hoo, including new abilities for Shovel Knight, new customization options, including new costumes for Shovel Knight, and a co-op mode to the entire single-player campaign of the game in the Wii U version.
Guess what we're doing?
Heck yeah.
So Satoshi Kitade-san, who is a programmer working on Final Fantasy XV, took some time out from working on the game to share some pre-beta progress on the official forums for the game. And he said that basically on the pre-beta build, it's nearly possible to play from the beginning to the end. And that basically they're working on fine-tuning and making sure that the details live up to Square Enix's high standard and are optimized for best performance and playability, and that the first half of the pre-beta build looks and plays at a retail copy level. That'll kind of give them guidance for how the rest of the game will be polished up.
Oh, dude, that is so exciting. And, you know, the crazy thing here, if you stop and think about it, is...
It only took, 10 years?
Okay, first off, we've talked about this here on the show. It's only been an active development for the last year and a half.
I'm teasing.
I just, you know, it really gets me. I see a lot of people saying, you know, oh, they've been working on this game for 10-plus years. Well, yeah, but they've only really been spending a great deal of money on it for the last couple years. And now we live in a world where people have played all the way through Final Fantasy XV. That's a thing that has happened. Anyway, we continue looking forward to the previously announced March event that will be giving Final Fantasy XV an official release window.
Oh, boy.
You know, everyone's saying that it's going to be a 2016 release, and now it's starting to feel true. It's starting to feel like we really will be have played Final Fantasy XV by this time next year.
Just think, I bought a PS3 for it.
You did. You bought multiple PS3s for it. Anyway, let's move forward. Slaggy?
Yes, we had that previously announced Danganronpa press conference. It has now happened, and the latest trailer for new Danganronpa V3 was released, as well as the announcement of an anime, Danganronpa 3, The End of Hope's Peak Academy. The new Danganronpa V3 trailer shows that the game takes place in a new academy with new characters, and the theme is described as psycho cool by Spike Chunsoft and having a cool adult-like image. And it'll have different investigations and class trials as the previous games had. And then Danganronpa 3, even though this is not anime buoy, will be continuing and concluding the story of the Hope's Peak Academy story that was from the previous game, so...
Which is wild. I mean, just really stop and think about that. The Danganronpa 1 and 2's official story is going to be ending in the Danganronpa 3 anime.
And apparently it can only be done through anime, according to Kazutaka Kodaka-san.
Slaggy, and I don't want to go too far afield because I know that we want to get through this episode quickly, but have you ever watched the Danganronpa anime?
I have not.
We should remedy that in the future. But okay, we can come
maybe
back to that.
Maybe a double Danganronpa buoy.
Heck yeah. We also have some lovely, lovely, lovely release dates here. The first is that Dark Souls 3 will be releasing in North America on April 12th, 2016 for PC, PS4, and Xbox One.
Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel will be out on December 22nd, according to Xseed.
Amplitude will be releasing on January 5th, and people who had kickstarted the game at the $40 or higher tier will gain access on December 23rd.
Is that you?
I believe so.
Cool. Star Ocean 5 Integrity and Faithlessness has been pushed back a little bit from February 25th to March 31st for quality reasons.
And that is in Japan. Let's be clear here. We are not that close to its North American release, unfortunately. We also have word here that Terraria will be releasing on the 3DS on December 10th.
Ooh.
And last but never ever least, we have word that Dragon Quest Monsters Joker 3 will be releasing in Japan on 3DS on March 24th, 2016. Unless you've got anything else, Slaggy, it might be time for some news.
Oh my god.
News. 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 Oh my god. News.
First up, we have word here that on December 10th, the official Pokken Tournament Twitter account will be revealing a new playable Pokemon. As well as that, there will also be a new support Pokemon that will be announced. The only information we have so far is that it is a Pokemon with the katakana N letter in its Japanese name. Since that could be many, many Pokemon, we're not quite sure yet exactly who this is going to be, but we should know at this point now in just a matter of days. I would assume this character will be available at launch at the home release of Pokken Tournament, and presumably will be patched into the arcade version after the announcement has been made. So definitely keep looking forward to this, and expect us to talk about it next episode.
Sony has recently announced the game Bound for PS4. It's kind of an art game focused on narrative. It's a 3D platform, but it's quote-unquote designed for people with the desire to concentrate on the narrative side of games and experience a mature story. It apparently has been playable at PSX, so we'll probably be hearing more details as we, you know, kind of wrap up that news cycle next week.
Indeed. We also have word here that Steam is finally adding the much-requested option to delete games permanently from your Steam library. I'm not entirely sure why anyone would want to do that myself.
Internet cred.
But, you know, if you own a game and you decide you don't want to own it anymore or ever have access to it ever again, you now have the option to do that.
The surprise hit Trauma Team for Wii is now available as a Wii U Virtual Console title.
Well, so we have to go back on that a little bit because Trauma Team is an amazing game, but it was not really a hit. It was actually, you know, it was incredibly well received by those of us that played it, but it actually underperformed well enough that the Trauma series has basically not continued after that point.
Oh.
It really sucks because, you know, I love these games. Trauma Center, fantastic. Trauma Team is basically a four-player co-op trauma center where you're playing on the Wii and everyone is doing, like, a different part of the operation or the surgery or whatever.
Oh, boy. So and maybe I should have said surprisingly well-received.
Oh, yeah, but it is what it is. Either way, great game. Finally getting a re-release. It's fairly expensive in the modern day because not a lot of people bought it, and since it turned out to be such a great game, now when you find a copy, they expensive. So $20 for a virtual console download on Wii U, I'm in. Take my money.
We have a lot of news from Idea Factory. So first off is the announcement of Mega Tag Dimension Blanc plus Neptune versus Zombies for the Vita. This is going to be a spring 2016 release in North America and Europe. And the description from Idea Factory is, fight off zombie hordes with friends in the first multiplayer game in the Neptunia series. Mega Tag Mansion Blanc plus Neptune versus Zombies for the PlayStation Vita system. Since set in Game Academy, Game Industries Academy for CPUs and CPU candidates, Blanc and friends must film a movie to save their school, fend off zombies, and look cute at the same time. Oh boy.
You know, I have such a complicated relationship with the Neptunia games. You know, there's all of the Moe stuff that I do not care for, but so many of them do it for me from a gameplay perspective, and this sounds like it might be another one of those.
Plus a little Blair Witch thrown in.
We also have word that Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, which we previously spoke about for its Japanese release some number of months ago, will be heading to North America and Europe in spring 2016 for PlayStation 4, where it will be available as both a retail and digital download game.
Also coming out of Idea Factory in 2016, a trio of Steam titles. These are going to be the releases of Monster Mon Piece, Hyper Dimension Neptunia U Action Unleashed, and Hyper Devotion Noir Goddess Blackheart.
You know, these are all games that we've talked about here on the show on their original releases. Hyper Devotion is the strategy RPG based on the Hyperdimension Neptunia series. Hyperdimension Neptunia U is the 3D hack and slash, so, you know, that's also something exciting. And Monster Mon Piece, you may recall, is a little bit questionable. This is the card RPG game that includes the rub mechanic, where you, rub characters to get prizes. I expect that will likely use the mouse for its interactivity, and we'll...
I think there's going to be a lot more than mouse interactivity there.
And last but never least, we have word here that Dark Cloud, as well as several other fan-favorite PS2 games, launched on PS4 yesterday. That's right, we now have official PS2 classics on PS4.
That came sooner than we thought.
Indeed. The first wave has two price points, $9.99 and $14.99. The $9.99 games are Twisted Metal Black and War of the Monsters. The $14.99 games are Dark Cloud, Grand Theft Auto 3, Grand Theft Auto Vice City, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, Rogue Galaxy, and The Mark of Kree. Something really cool here is Dark Cloud and Rogue Galaxy both are level 5 games.
Yes!
It is fantastic to see level 5 getting this love.
Yeah, those were like their earliest efforts, right?
Indeed. And in addition to these games, they also had two more games playable at the PlayStation Experience show floor at San Francisco this weekend. And those were Parappa the Rapper 2.
Gotta believe!
And King of Fighters 2000. What, you don't have a cute quip for King of Fighters?
Cute.
We don't have release dates or windows for those other two titles yet, but we will definitely keep you posted. You know, we are huge PS2 fans here in studio, obviously. How could we not be? And it is just absolutely fantastic to see these games getting some love, especially those level 5 games. So we mentioned that the PlayStation Experience is happening right now. Well, yesterday morning, there was a keynote presentation from the main stage of the PlayStation Experience. And Slagkick and I both made sure to watch it so that we could tell you about it. Slaggy, you want to start?
Yes, it started off with a bang with a new trailer for Final Fantasy VII Remake for PS4. And what we saw were some glimpses of gameplay that...
Gameplay?
Yes. Well, I mean, one assumes, or at least a mock-up of gameplay, which seemed to imply a more action-based battle system, somewhat visually reminiscent of the Kingdom Hearts franchise.
You know, I found it very reminiscent of the Final Fantasy XV demo gameplay, which is
not surprising.
Not surprising at all. You figure, you know, if they find that that battle system works, it's not that surprising to see that they'd want to stick with it and continue evolving it.
I could imagine it being, like, you know, a more action-based, but then building up the limit break still, because, you know, I can't see them totally forgoing, you know, some of the classic modes.
You know, limit breaks are so... I mean, they've been a part of the series even for not 7, but they are absolutely iconic in the context of 7. I can't see them.
Yeah, I mean, like, Final Fantasy 14 has limit breaks, so, I mean, it's as easy as being like, oh, build up this meter, and then you can use it. But yeah. Now we're just doing speculation, Bowie.
Either way, this footage is out there in the wild. You can see it easily. If you're listening to this, you've probably already seen it.
You've probably already been like, oh my god.
Also got English voice acting, so this game appears to be further along than expected.
Yeah, that was the big thing for me.
It's not necessarily surprising per se. We do know for a fact that Capcom, that Square Enix is no longer developing using internal tools. They're starting to work with like Unreal Engine 4, and it's again, you know, not really surprising to me that this game is as far along as it is when I stop and think about it. The Square Enix of today is very different than the Square Enix of 10 years ago. Every game, they're trying to build up a new engine to push every console to its absolute limits for every release, and we ended up seeing them squander away huge amounts of money and time. More recently, you know, they've been very open about embracing Unreal tech for stuff like Dissidia, even Kingdom Hearts, Nier, you know, and several of these other big games that they have coming, these big Japanese-developed games that they have coming. So it's not a surprise to me that, assuming Final Fantasy VII is running off that tech, we already have gameplay footage.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, a lot of people have been like, LOL, Final Fantasy VII Remake's coming never. I think it's going to be a 2017 release.
20th anniversary!
Exactly. It's the 20th anniversary of the original release of Final Fantasy VII.
Fabula Novella Crystallis.
Next year's big game is going to be 15. We know that. We were just talking about it. I see no reason why the next year's big game for them will be Final Fantasy VII. And, you know, I've seen some people say, I don't think they'll release Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy in the same year. But I disagree. I think that Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy are both big enough to coexist in the same year. As long as they have three or four months between them, I don't think they'll cannibalize each other's sales.
Yeah.
So that's definitely my expectation, that we're going to see this game sooner rather than later.
And for those who just can't wait to play Final Fantasy VII on their PS4, they can now get the PC port on the PS4. Or maybe you're someone who's like, nah, that new one doesn't look good. I just want my blocky cloud and, finger, what the hell?
And hey, more power to you.
So that is available right now. So boot up your PS4 if you have one and you want to do it.
For those of you who care about such things, it is worth noting that this release of the game does have trophies.
Ooh. Date with Barrett.
We also had Yoshinori Ono-san come out from Capcom. And of course, he was his usual wacky self. He unveiled the newest and last launch character of Street Fighter V. This character is Fang. He is a member of the Shadaloo organization. Ono-san described his playstyle as sneaky and tricky. And Ono-san was very excited to have a part in a character unveiling that did not have a leak prior to the presentation. Right? Ono-san is such a lovable guy. Street Fighter V, in case you've forgotten, will be coming to the PlayStation 4 and Windows PC platforms on February 16th.
So soon.
In addition to that, we finally got official confirmation of the first 6 DLC characters for Street Fighter V. Due to the fact that we had silhouettes of these 6 characters shown to us previously through official social media channels of Capcom's, we had kind of figured it out already, but it was nice to have them confirmed. Our first wave of characters will be Alex from Final Fantasy III, Final Fantasy, from Street Fighter 3, Guile, Street Fighter 2, Balrog or Boxer from Street Fighter 2, Ibuki from Street Fighter 3, Juri from, I think, Street Fighter Alpha 3, and Urien from Street Fighter 3. So I think this is very cool stuff. I'm very excited to see these characters announced, and I will definitely be playing them. You know, something that's really cool, while they did announce a season pass for this game. Oh, Juri's from Street Fighter 4. My bad. You know, while they did announce a season pass for these characters so that you could buy it and pay for these characters and have them unlocked immediately, it does also need to be mentioned, all of these characters will be available for no real purchase if you have in-game fight money that is earned by playing the game. I still think that's a really cool way for Capcom to do DLC characters, and I'm very excited to see these six characters come to Street Fighter V and to play Street Fighter V come February.
Indeed. And for those of you out there who are big Destiny fans,
woo!
From December 8th to December 29th, you'll be able to partake in the Sparrow Racing League!
Yes, you go, Player 2!
And there'll be prizes!
Yay!
And I play Destiny now, so good for me.
Sparrow Racing League will start this Tuesday, December 8th, and it will be free for all Taken King owners to participate in until December 29th.
That's interesting wording. Do you think it'll have to be purchased after that?
No, not at all. I think it's an event that will be forever playable by Taken King players. I think it's just going to be like a monthly or quarterly event.
Ah, I see.
You know, they already have several monthly and quarterly events, and I think this is just going to be another one to go into the mix along with, you know, Trials of Osiris that only happens on weekends, and you have the Iron Whatever that happens in Crucible where everybody's gear is actually scaled up rather than being all scaled to like a median number.
Iron Banner.
Iron Banner, yeah, that's it. So I think this is just going to be another recurring event added to the rotation, and hey, I say the more the merrier. I love the fact that Destiny feels like more of a living world than a lot of MMOs I play.
Yep.
Looking in your direction, World of Warcraft.
Oh!
We also have word here that Double Fine is remastering their much-loved classic adventure game, Full Throttle, for the PS4. In addition, we finally got a release window for the remaster of Day of the Tentacle. That'll be coming to PS4 and Vita this March.
In other news from Double Fine, Tim Schafer also announced a PlayStation VR game, Psychonauts Rhombus of Ruin, a brand new adventure in the Psychonauts world.
Ooh, exciting.
And we have word, double word, from the Yakuza series. Not only is Yakuza 5 going to be coming to the PlayStation Store this Tuesday, we also have official confirmation of the Western release of Yakuza 0.
Oh man, that is so awesome. Yakuza 0 is a prequel to Yakuza. It's set in the 80s, and it has multiple playable characters, but most of the story, either direct or indirectly, relates to Kazuma Kiryu's life, sort of as he's moved on, but before he's the character that we come to know in the first five Yakuza games. So it's definitely worth looking into. I've heard nothing but good things about it from friends who have imported. I did not import Zero. I had a feeling that it was going to be releasing here, but either way, it's very, very exciting to have that be official and have something to look forward to for PlayStation 4.
Indeed.
We also got a new trailer for Tecmo Koei Tecmo. Gosh, I always mix up which part of that name comes
Tecmo
first.
Tecmo Toei.
Either way, developed by Team Ninja, this new game, it was previously announced, but I don't believe we had seen gameplay footage. This is Neo, and it turns out that it's going to be like a supernatural feudal Japan, you know, Ninja Gaiden-style game. So it definitely looked very cool to me. I had been expecting Neo to be more like a Musou-style game, so I'm really excited to see that it's a little bit closer to like an environmental exploration character action type setup.
Yeah, I was definitely getting some Ninja Gaiden vibes. Let's just hope that Team Ninja doesn't make any Facebook comments about this game that aren't representative of the full company.
We also got the announcement of a new Rez game. Oh my god. Which, holy moly. This is Rez Infinite. It'll be coming to PlayStation VR. It will run at 1080p resolution and at 60 frames per second, as well as featuring 3D audio.
And thankfully, you won't have to have PlayStation VR to enjoy it.
Oh, fantastic. Even better.
Can we talk about how that was unveiled?
If you'd like to, sure.
So when they unveiled Res Infinite, there was someone in a very stylized, almost like Daft Punk or Tron-like suit that was basically a full-body VR experience sort of thing. I mean, am I describing that correctly in your eyes?
Yeah.
And then this individual took off their helmet, and it was Tetsuya Mizuguchi-san.
Which is fantastic. It was so great to see him on stage, even if it was only for a moment. And, you know, it just was really respectful to the legacy of Rez. Really excited to see Rez making a comeback. I can't wait to play it.
Yeah, and then on the, like, little after-show thing that that they had on the stream, I just really loved that they were, like, basically giving Mizuguchi-san credit for any, basically every rhythm game hybrid ever, like, you know, since the early 2000s, owes a lot to his work with Q Entertainment.
Which, you know, accurate.
Right.
We also had the announcement of Ace Combat 7, which will also support PlayStation VR, and in fact will be exclusive to PlayStation VR.
Yeah, at least one person in the audience sounded very excited about that.
Yep. Then, megaton of megatons, we got a new announcement from Level 5. This one is a sequel to their well-loved game, Ni No Kuni. This is Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom. Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom will be coming to PlayStation 4 at a future date, and the official website is now open. And last, but actually pretty much least, the finale for the PlayStation Experience 2015 keynote was a MOBA. This one is called Paragon. And was that yawn intentional? Was that a real yawn, or was that for effect?
Cool. More MOBAs.
Yeah, so early access will begin this spring. There will be an open beta in the summer. It's a MOBA on PS4. So, Sagi, overall, what did you think of the PlayStation Experience keynote?
You know, there were definitely some very exciting announcements, but I don't know if it just was the fact that, you know, their E3 keynote was huge. So I would say it wasn't overwhelming, but it wasn't underwhelming. I'd say it was just whelming.
It was just whelming.
And also, side note, Ni No Kuni should have a crossover with Kunio-kun and be Ni No Kunio-kun.
Ah! That's funny. You know,
I'm dodging tomatoes now.
I thought it was overall a good experience. I thought it was interesting that it was so front-loaded. You know, when they brought out Final Fantasy VII as like their first thing, I was like, holy moly, this has to be one hell of an event.
Yeah, that's why after that MOBA was unveiled, I was like, wait, the house lights are back on and people are getting up and they're going into the after show now?
I felt like I was at a Glassjaw show. Like, they just abruptly ended their last song. No encore. No thank you to anyone. Just bye. Yeah, but, you know,
it felt like this.
Much like being at a Glassjaw show, at least the actual performance was, like, life-changingly good. I thought that what the stuff they had to show was all really good stuff. It's just funny to me that they had all of the spectacle front-loaded. Like, if you watched the first half and then went to make a sandwich and never came back, you didn't miss a whole lot.
Or, you know, if you went to go turn on Mitchell.
My Mitchell. My God, stop! So, you know, there's another big event in the games industry this week. Then we want to talk a little bit about that. This was the Game Awards 2015. There were a handful of announcements, but the first thing I want to talk about is actually almost like the slapback heard around the world. And this was Jeff Keighley, or I can never pronounce his name correctly, but we all know who I'm talking about.
I think that's right.
Oh, good. He basically...
This is a post-Thanksgiving slapback.
All right. He basically straight up called out Konami. And I'm actually going to read this because I think this quote is worth worth having in context.
Can I be the audience when...
Okay, Slaggy will represent the audience. I will be Jeff. So basically what happened is that they were going to give Hideo Kojima an award for the Phantom Pain, and Kiefer Sutherland came out to accept the award on Kojima-san's behalf, and Jeff went all in. As you noticed, Hideo Kojima is not here with us tonight, and I want to tell you a little bit about that. Mr. Kojima had every intention of being with us tonight, but unfortunately he was informed by a lawyer representing Konami just recently that he would not be allowed to travel to tonight's awards ceremony to accept any awards.
Boo, boo, boo.
He's still under an employment contract, and it's disappointing and it's inconceivable to me that an artist like Hideo would not be allowed to come here and celebrate with his peers and his fellow teammates. So, you know, to have the Kojima-Konami controversy straight up acknowledged in front of everybody, it really gave everything a sort of air of, like, seriousness to the proceedings. I say seriousness, I guess I mean authenticity. You know, a lot of people have long viewed the Game Awards, previously the VGAs, as being, you know, a very self-serving, masturbatory exercise. You know, game industry gonna game industry, no ethics, etc., etc. In a lot of ways, this felt like
the Neptunia to the game industry.
Oh, man. But no, it felt like the Game Awards stepped into a little bit more of an authentic light. And, you know, this was paired with a bunch of well-received AAA games losing awards to some really fantastic creative indie titles. So it was just really taken as a package. The Game Awards this year felt like a true and real celebration of the games industry. We noted last year that it was starting to feel that way, that last year's Game Awards was starting to feel like a legitimate celebration of this hobby that we all love. And this last week's 2015 Game Awards took that a step further.
Well, it sure helped that they didn't give the Social Gamer of the Year award to someone who makes misogynistic statements, as far as I know about that person.
So let's move forward to some of these announcements. The first was the next slate of Mortal Kombat X characters that will be available for DLC. This is going to be Texas Chainsaw Massacre's Leatherface.
You sit down and shut the fuck up.
Bo Raicho, who is the token fat character of the Mortal Kombat universe. Triborg, who is a robot mashup of previous Robo Ninjas, Cyrax, Sektor, and Robot Smoke.
Triborg.
And an alien xenomorph. But it's worth mentioning this alien xenomorph is not just any old xenomorph. It is a xenomorph that was inexplicably born from the chest of Mortal Kombat 2 veteran Baraka. So This alien xenomorph has Baraka's token arm blades. I'm not entirely sure about that stylistic choice, but I look forward to playing as at least two of these characters, and if I were a listener, I would expect to hear some amount of feedback on them when these characters release sometime in 2016. We also have word here that this year's breakout multiplayer hit Rocket League will be releasing on Xbox One in February.
That's cool.
And that it will have exclusive Halo and Gears of War cars and car equipment for you to equip in-game.
Doing Doritos, bro!
We also got the announcement that Shadow Complex Remastered is coming to the PC, and more excitingly, is available this holiday season as a free download before it becomes a paid download next year. After that, we had developer Double Fine make the announcement of their much-loved 10-year-old adventure platformer, Psychonauts. This was the announcement that they will be crowdfunding through Fig a sequel to Psychonauts. This is Psychonauts 2. Fig is a platform that lets players actually become investors rather than just contributors, and, you know, however much money the game makes through Fig, you know, is going to go to the game's development budget. People who kick money into it will be, you know, getting rewarded in kind, as it is an investment rather than just a contribution. And, you know, it's definitely something to look forward to. It'd be interesting if this were to put a Band-Aid on some of the problems that people have with, you know, Kickstarter and the like.
Yeah.
And I think that is, there's one more. Do you want to take this one, Saigi?
I suppose. You know, there's a lot of people out there who are a big fan of Telltale's games, and a lot of people out there who are a big fan of Batman. So if that's you, you're going to be happy about this teaser that aired, which is hinting at a Telltale Games Batman game. I mean, no real details have been announced yet, but I mean, it's almost certainly going to be an episodic narrative sort of based, you know, thing. That's what Telltale does, so it has the Telltale signs of being the same.
Oh, you.
I mean, I'm more of a Marvel person myself, but, you know, these games, like I said, are generally very well received, so hey, I guess there's DC needs something good in their slate, right? I'll stop.
You shady lady. All right, well, all that having been said, looks like we have just one more news piece before we get to our discussion. However, this one is pretty controversial.
Is it so controversial?
It is.
Controversial.
Oh my god.
So we have word here that earlier this week, the well-loved fan mod to Super Smash Bros. Brawl. This is Project M, which is designed to make Smash Bros. Brawl play more like Smash Bros. Melee, has mysteriously and quite abruptly ceased development after 6 years of rather frequent updates. You know, this is a really strange situation because Project M was controversial in that while it was never officially sanctioned by Nintendo, Project M was played widespread at basically every competitive gaming event for years, from basically like 2008 until last year when 4 came out. And even then, after 4 came out, some tourneys were still running Project M brackets. So it's just kind of fascinating that this game, which was well supported by its developers, its fans were playing it really quite frequently and quite high profile, just abruptly up and left. A lot of people are claiming a lot of things. Some people claim that, you know, there must have been cease and desist orders issued, there must have been threats made, there must have been some legal action taken. The Project M folks are pretty unanimously saying that did not happen, but that they, became worried because they realized that they were not legally protected the ways that they thought they were. They had thought, I guess, that they would be protected, and it turns out that they would not. That if someone came to them with a suit, they would have no real defense against it, and they did not want to get caught in a situation like that. So people are, they're very disappointed about this situation, and I think it sucks. You know, I'm not a big Project M fan. I prefer playing Melee. I prefer playing Smash 4. I for whatever reason, this mod just never really worked for me. But sorry to see it go for the people who loved it. And, hopefully in the future, these incredibly, incredibly talented devs can maybe make a PC Smash-style game. I think that a Smash-style game could do really well in the PC ecosystem.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Sagi, any other thoughts before we get to this discussion?
No, because, like you said, I've never really had much experience with Project M. I mean, really, Smash 4 is the first time I've really seriously learned to play the game. So, but like you said, I think that this talent should hopefully try to channel their talents into an original game.
Awesome. All right. Well, then, with that having been said, let's start talking about some Nintendo subsidiaries and partner studios. All right. So this week, we're going to talk about Nintendo's some of Nintendo's subsidiaries and partner studios. We're not going to talk about everyone because I would actually have a really difficult time doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Nintendo's worked with so many incredibly talented studios over the years. I think it would basically be impossible to do an episode on all of them and not end up going, 4 hours. So in the interest of our time and yours, we're going to keep it to just 10 or so. The goal here is to move through these pretty quickly. And if anyone out in Internet Radio Land has any suggestions of partner studios we missed, or you want to talk about some of your favorite games by some of these studios, please, please, please reach out to us over on twitter.com at gamebuoy.org. The .org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
Gamebuoy.org. The .org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
And obviously, as ever and always, you can email us over at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
All right, so let's get started here. I will take this first one. I want to start off by talking about the studio currently known as 1UP Studio. 1UP Studio was previously known as Brownie Brown Inc. You might be familiar with them for development on such games as Magical Vacation, Mother 3, Magical Star Sign. So Brownie Brown was primarily formed by a bunch of old Squaresoft 2D artists. A lot of people who had previously worked on the Seiken Densetsu games. They formed on June 30th, the year 2000. They employ about 30 people, and their games developed have actually become pretty interesting. They did Magical Vacation, Mother 3, Sword of Mana, all for the Game Boy Advance. Moved on to Magical Star Sign, Heroes of Mana for DS, Also, the Blue Dragon sequel, Blue Dragon Plus, for DS. They made the London Life minigame in Professor Layton and the Last Spectre. They did a DSiWare game called A Kappa's Trail, which was actually really well received in its day. So, you know, that's all good stuff. But in the modern age, you know, they ended up coming in for production assistance on Fantasy Life. They did dev work on Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes, did dev work on Super Mario 3D Land and 3D World, as well as Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
Yeah.
So, you know, what you really see here is a studio that formed of, you know, Square Enix folks who Nintendo really sort of brought in under their wing and has started to work with them to really make them a force that can deal with, you know, entries in some of their top-tier franchises.
Indeed.
So, you know, that's really interesting stuff. Do you have any thoughts on any of these Brandy Brown games or Brandy Brown in general? Or,
you know, I never was
One-Up Studio, as they're known now.
I was never too familiar with the Brandy Brown titles, but, you know, definitely looking at this list, it's great that this talent is being used to, you know, because all of those ones that you mentioned for 3DS and Wii U are all, you know, fantastic, so.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I don't necessarily love Heroes of Mana, but I thought that Sword of Mana was really underappreciated. That was a remake of the original Seiken Densetsu. Unfortunately, the current remake of Seiken Densetsu, which is being done for the Vita, we talked about it a few weeks ago, will not be taking any of its cues from Sword of Mana. So
that's a bummer.
Boo.
I liked Final Fantasy Adventure.
Then, Seiken, do you want to get us started about this next studio?
Yes, this is one that's very beloved by many. This is, of course, Monolith Soft, and, you know, really interesting kind of history there. It, of course, was an offshoot of Square Enix. Tetsuya Takahashi-san was best known for Xenogears, of course. And basically, Squaresoft didn't move forward with the Xenogears sequel, so he broke off and took some of the talent from the Xenogears team to create the Xeno series. So, you know, there was the Xenosaga games, which were a collaboration with Namco, because at first they were a, you know, subsidiary of Namco shortly after being founded. And they also did, you know, the Baton Kaito series. During the Wii era, May 2007, Nintendo ended up
taking over a controlling interest.
Took the controlling, controlling interest from Bandai Namco, and then ended up really just ended up buying up the rest of it. So it is a full Nintendo subsidiary now, and they're, you know, about over 100-ish staff members, and you're probably most familiar with them lately for things like Xenoblade Chronicles and Xenoblade Chronicles X. But they've also done a lot of development cooperation for some of the big recent titles, including Skyward Sword, including Pikmin 3, A Link Between Worlds, Splatoon, Animal Crossing New Leaf, Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer. So Monolith Soft, you know, very, very celebrated group of people, and, you know, often pulled in to help out with these games. And they also co-developed Project Crosszone and Project Crosszone 2 with Ben Presto.
Well, you know, they've had their fingers in a lot of pies. They worked on Dirge of Cerberus, Final Fantasy VII. You know, they did work on Super Smash Bros. Brawl. Obviously, Baton Kaitos and Xenosaga, as you mentioned. Disaster Day of Crisis was one of their first big, you know, after becoming a Nintendo first-party developer, basically. Disaster was one of their big releases. Unfortunately, never saw release in North America, but I think it's a fantastic game. They did a really cool JRPG for the Nintendo DS based on Dragon Ball Z. It's called Dragon Ball Z Attack of the Saiyans in North America. It is like a full command menu-based Dragon Ball Z JRPG.
They've continued to have a very positive relationship with Bandai Namco. You know, Nintendo and Bamco really, you know, are good friends these days, so
they contributed to Skyward Sword, Pikmin 3, Animal Crossing New Leaf, Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds, Splatoon, Happy Home Designer. You know, Nintendo taps them so often and uses them so frequently. You know, they're so talented that they actually, a few years back in 2012, I think it was, actually opened up a second studio dedicated to just working with the Nintendo EAD groups.
Yeah, that's their Kyoto studio, correct?
Their Kyoto studio, yeah. So, you know, it's just really interesting that, you know, this studio that started off doing basically just like hardcore JRPGs is now like a main leg of Nintendo's development structure.
Yeah.
Next up, I want to talk about ND Cube. ND Cube is a little bit of a weird one.
Yeah.
But it's very cool. NDCube is formed up largely of former staff of Hudson Soft.
Yeah.
There was a Max Exodus. They were originally founded in the year 2000, but in April 2006, a lot of people migrated over to Nintendo and or Square Enix, to the point that most of what NDCube makes in the modern age is pretty much like Mario Party and that's it.
Wii Party.
They did Wii Party. They did Wii Party U. They did Mario Party 8, 9, and 10. They did Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival. Mario Party Island Tour.
Party.
So, yeah, they're pretty much party, party, party. It is cool, though, that, you know, before forming NDCube, a lot of these ex-Hudson staff were previously responsible for games like Lost in Shadow and Bomberman 64. So, you know, it's cool that Nintendo is at least keeping that talent
right
in Nintendo in some way.
And, of course, Hudson Soft used to develop the Mario Party series.
Well, exactly. So, you know, they've, like I said, they've done a really great job of keeping that talent on these properties, keeping them working on stuff that they know and can do. Saigi, would you like to talk about this next studio?
You bet. This is another one that's very celebrated these days, and that is, of course, Retro Studios, which is, I believe, the only American one we're going to be talking about.
I think we'll probably talk about one other.
Oh, that's right. There is another one, but definitely the one that most people probably think about.
Yeah.
And this was actually dating back into October of 1998, and it kind of developed with the goal in mind to create GameCube games. It was a partnership between Nintendo and former members of Iguana Entertainment, who you might know for the Turok series. And, of course, their big claims to fame, of course, were the Metroid Prime trilogy. And these games were very well loved, and, you know, people are still clamoring for, you know, more Metroid because Other M did not really satisfy people too much. And in recent years, they've really also been celebrated for the Donkey Kong Country Returns series. So that's, you know, Donkey Kong Country Returns, Returns 3D, and Tropical Freeze, you know, which
and
are...
And Tropical Freeze, you know, a lot of us out there who have played a lot of 2D side-scrolling games think that it is one of the best 2D side-scrolling games in years, and I still absolutely stand by that. Tropical Freeze is an incredible game.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people say that they feel that Retro does a better job with the Donkey Kong Country series than Rare ever did, so...
I personally would agree with that, especially now that we have David Wise working back on this game with, like, Retro doing the level design and stuff. It's really like the best Donkey Kong Country has ever been.
Yeah, they also helped co-develop Mario Kart 7, which, you know, turned out fantastic. Still a really great game.
Indeed, and you know, they actually, although it's not often recognized, they did pop up in the credits of Mario Kart 8 as well for some co-development work. So
yeah, but I mean, when you're roster of games is Metroid Prime series and the Donkey Kong Country Revival Returns. I mean, just gem after gem after gem here.
Yeah, and something about this that is interesting is that we actually know for a fact that Retro Studios is working on a new game that is currently unannounced.
That's right. I feel like we originally buzzed that earlier.
Well, we would have, yeah, because it was actually announced by CEO of Retro Studios, Michael Kelbaugh, and he confirmed that they're working with Nintendo director Kensuke Tanabe-san, whom we've talked about quite a few times here on the show over the years, that they've been working on a new project with Tanabe-san since a few months,
well, probably a
before
few minutes.
Tropical Freeze was finished. So this is a game that's already been in development for well more than a year.
Well, they probably were involved a few minutes after it released.
Oh, well,
all right,
yes,
back to work,
so.
Boys and girls.
Welcome to Games Dev. The next studio that I want to talk about here, and this is going to be a little bit of a different conversation, is actually Creatures Inc.
Yes.
This was founded by Tsunekazu Ishihara-san on November of 1995. This is the successor to Shigesato Itoi's company Ape Inc., and is probably most well known for the production of Pokemon card games and toys based on Pokemon. But obviously, you know, they count under their belt stuff like Mother 2, some of the early Picross games, the Game Boy Pocket Camera software, Mother 3. In fact, even like Pokemon Emerald is actually credited to Monsters Inc. So, you know, there's...
Monsters, some... Inc.
Well, not Monsters, Inc. I'm sorry. Creatures, Inc.
Hey, Solly.
They've also done work on the Pokemon Ranger subseries, the Wii games, the Poke Park games.
Oh, those.
Ah, you shady lady. So it's, you know, it's some interesting stuff. Sly, what do you think about Creatures, Inc.?
No, just like you said, they're primarily associated with Pokemon. And, you know, I mean, I remember seeing Creatures, Inc. along with, now I want to say Monsters, Inc., Game Freak. I always feel like Game Freak and Creatures, Inc. really kind of have often gone hand in hand together. So, you know, definitely like the Pokemon connection, like I said.
Well, then let's talk next about Next Level Games. Next Level Games is an independent dev. They're based in Vancouver in Canada. They were founded in October of 2002, and it's interesting because, you know, they really got their start making, like, NHL Hits Pro, which was like the NHL version of NBA Blitz. But they ended up working with Nintendo. Nintendo selected them after NHL Hits. Nintendo selected them to work on the Super Mario Strikers game, known as Mario Smash Football in the PAL regions.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nintendo tapped them again after that for the Mario Strikers Charged game, which is the sequel. And, you know, these Nintendo was so happy with them that while they were still taking work on other publishers, they did a Spider-Man game for Activision. They did a Xbox Live Arcade port of well-loved board game Ticket to Ride. Nintendo tapped them for their Punch-Out revival as well.
Yeah.
And from there, you know, they started working with Nintendo pretty exclusively. They wrapped up a couple of games that they already had in the pipeline, including a Captain America licensed game, a version of Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon for the Wii, and a Transformers game for Activision, before announcing in January of 2014 that they will exclusively be working with Nintendo from there on out.
Yep.
And they are the ones that are behind the Luigi's Mansion sequel, Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon. And that's really why we bring them up here, because Dark Moon is a fantastic sequel to Luigi's Mansion. In fact, it is one of those rare sequels where people play it and say, you know, this is unquestionably better than the original. As we talked about when we did our Game Boy
flashlight
on Luigi's Mansion. So, you know, they have definitely been welcomed into the Nintendo fold, and I think we pretty much all are waiting with bated breath to see how Metroid Prime Federation Force turns out releases on 3DS in 2016. Slaggy, you have wanted to talk about this next studio pretty much the entire time we have been doing Game Buoy. It is time.
Well, and I mean, I really feel like they have popped up multiple times because, you know, we talked about Kirby, and we've talked about Smash, and we talked about the late Iwata-san, and I'm, of course, talking about HAL Laboratory. You know, HAL has really, for a very long time, had a long association with Nintendo. They weren't exclusively Nintendo to start out with. You know, they had some games for Commodore 64, ColecoVision, MSX, MSX2, early Windows games, but pretty much in terms of, you know, the whole home consoles, you know, it's pretty much been a relationship with Nintendo all the way through. And they were founded in February of 1980, so very long-standing studio and, you know, very long relationship with Nintendo. They employ about 150 employees, give or take. And, of course, you know, aside from things like the Eggerland or Lolo series early on, I mean, this is who we have to thank for Kirby and who we have to thank for, you know, Earthbound Mother. This is who we have to thank for the Pokemon Stadium games, Smash Brothers. I mean, if you remember what we were talking about, all of the different games that Iwata-san had his hands involved in, you know, these are probably some of the, you know, most celebrated Nintendo games, to the point where I think a lot of people maybe who aren't as familiar with, you know, the history of Nintendo and the history of HAL Laboratory might not even realize that those weren't just like, you know, Nintendo. That, you know, HAL Laboratory has had this storied history. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, we talked a lot about their involvement with our episode dedicated in memory of Iwata-san, but do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, I think you've got all of the high notes. You know, it's certainly, we've talked about HAL here quite a bit, even talking, you know, again, we've told the anecdote previously about why they got their name even. So, yeah. You know, we've talked about HAL a lot, but, you know, I know you're always excited to talk about them a little
more. Oh, indeed. And, you know, a lot of, you know, leaders past and present of Nintendo coming up through the ranks at HAL Laboratory. So
absolutely. Well, this next one is one that I'm really passionate about.
Oh, yeah.
This is Intelligent Systems. Intelligent Systems was founded in Kyoto, Japan, in December 1986. And they are primarily known for the Fire Emblem series. But, you know, they've done work on a lot of other game series over the years. They've been responsible for work on stuff like Devil World, bringing that over to Europe. They were known for working on the original Metroid. They had a big hand in a lot of the launch Game Boy games, stuff like Alleyway, Baseball, Yakuman, Golf. Then they started getting into like the Famicom Wars series, which came to North America for the first time as Advance Wars. You know, they had a big hand in Super Metroid, had a big hand in Panel de Pon, brought to North America as Tetris Attack. They did my beloved Galactic Pinball for the Virtual Boy. So I'm a huge Intelligent Systems fan. You know, they've done work on most of the main WarioWare games, possibly all of them, now that I'm actually really looking at this. They did Dragon Quest Wars, which was like my first tactics-style game for the DSiWare platform. They did Pushmo and Crashmo, as well as Pushmo World. They did Stretchmo as well. Upcoming Gene Ibun Roku Cross Fire Emblem, or FE. Technically not Fire Emblem, but you know what a lot of us are just calling FE Sharp. They did Codename Steam for the 3DS. They did the Daigaso Band Brothers games. Just incredible variety of games here that Intelligent Systems does. They've produced for basically every single one of Nintendo's consoles. And they actually have like a very similar lineage to HAL Laboratory, where, you know, it used to be sort of an auxiliary unit for Nintendo that is now like one of their prime pillars of game development and design.
Did you mention Paper Mario?
I did not mention Paper Mario. That's how diverse and big Intelligent Systems is.
That was really,
I could leave off Paper Mario.
That was really what was interesting for me once I started doing this show with you is, you know, I hadn't really played any of the Fire Emblems. I knew about Advance Wars, but, you know, once I really got to know more about Intelligent Systems, I never knew, like, just how back far back their history went. And it's, like, very impressive resume.
Yeah, absolutely. Sagi, you are more equipped to deal with this next one than I am. If you'd like to take it, you should take it.
Yeah, and you know, we talked a little bit about the history of this company during our Pokemon episode a couple years back. And this is, of course, Game Freak, which was founded by Satoshi Tajiri-san and Ken Sugimori-san and Junichi Masuda-san, who are still, you know, the key figures involved with Pokemon today. And, you know, we mostly think of them as the developers of the mainline Pokemon games. But, of course, we also mentioned, you know, they did the Yoshi puzzle game. They've done some gems like Harmony Night. They've done some, I can't really speak about Mendel Palace. I guess some people may consider that a gem. Pulse Man for the Mega Drive.
Pulse Man is such an incredible game.
And they're currently working on, is that out yet? Tembo the Badass Elephant? Did that finally come out?
Yeah, Tembo is out.
I didn't get around to that, but you know, so.
Yeah, it's really cute.
Yeah, that was for PS4 and Xbone and PC. So, yep. You know, most often, obviously, working for the handheld Nintendo consoles, Drill Dozer is another gem of theirs. But, you know, occasionally they will branch out into just very fun and kind of quirky titles. Like, Harmonite was really quirky and fun, and Drill Dozer as well, just very cute aesthetic as well. So, you know.
Well, yeah, and, you know, that's actually one of my favorite things about Game Freak is that, you know, we think of them as a
Pokemon.
As the Pokemon guys. But, you know, they still do really cool stuff.
They're the ones who make the Pokemans.
Drill Dozer was a fantastic game on the GBA. I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of Pulse Man, dating back to the days of the Sega Channel in North America, where it was pretty much its only original release here. Though it did eventually get released on the virtual console on the original Wii. I highly recommend you check out Pulse Man if you like you know, 1990s era 2D platformer action games, stuff like Mega Man and the like. You know, and then they've also done stuff like rhythm games in the form of Harmonite. You know, this new game, Tembo the Badass Elephant, which is, you know, a fun little game. Game Freak is an incredibly versatile studio. They do not play solely within the Nintendo sandbox, which is interesting because, you know, most of the Nintendo people that we've talked about, even someone like Next Level Games, who's a relative newcomer, they're not even strictly, you know, so closely associated with Nintendo. And they're like Nintendo exclusive. And Game Freak is just like, nah, Game Freak on Game Freak. If PlayStation 4, Xbox One is the right platform for us, that's where we're developing.
So before we move on, I have to ask, do you have experience with Smartball, a.k.a. Jerry Boy?
I do not. Where is that from?
It's a Game Freak game. It was for the...
Oh, Super snap!
Jelly Boy, but...
Yes, I am familiar with this. It's awful. Space Pirate Ben, his mom had this game. It's awful.
Well, it was Sony published, so we'll blame that on Sony.
Ah, you shady lady. But, you know, again, it's Game Freak is experimental. They try new things, and, you know, more power to you guys.
Indeed. So let's move on to the next one.
This next one is Genius Sonority, and we've talked about them a few times over the years. You know, they were actually formed specifically for the purpose of developing Pokemon games for home consoles, and they were incorporated in June 2002 with funding provided by Hiroshi Yamauchi's Q Fund, which is a cash reserve specifically used for Nintendo-related game company startups. But something that's interesting is that while they were formed explicitly for Pokemon games, they've actually gone on to be better known for the well-loved 3DS eShop series, The Denpa Men.
Yep.
They've also done work on the recent Pokemon experimentation title, Pokemon Shuffle.
Yep.
They've done a little bit of work on like some Disney Fairies Tinkerbell game, which I'm not quite sure they would want to brag about. They even did Dragon Quest Swords, The Masked Queen, and The Tower of Mirrors.
Yeah, and they also took over the stadium games, if you want to call it that, Coliseum and Battle Revolution from HAL Laboratory. They did XD Gale of Pokemon XD Gale of Darkness and the Pokemon Trozei games.
Excellent. So yeah, that's another really interesting one that, you know, they formed for the purpose of Pokemon games, and they've actually branched out and done more than that. And I dare say their work on the Denpa Men is far more interesting than their work on some of these Pokemon spinoffs.
Indeed. Wait, you don't like Pokemon Typing Adventure?
Ah. I can't say as I do. So I want to talk about one more studio after this, and then we have two sort of sidebars, but I want to knock this out by talking about sort of the grandpappy, and this is the Pokemon Company. And Saigi, you typically have a pretty good understanding of the Pokemon Company, so I'd like you to start this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the Pokemon Company is really much bigger than just the, you know, Pokemon games. It's really about managing the Pokemon brand. I mean, so, you know, definitely has those ties with Game Freak and Creatures Inc. And it actually was founded in 1998, so, you know, right as Pokemon was starting to explode, to kind of, you know, manage the brand. So the Pokemon Company has, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's more like a sidebar, I'd say, like, because it really is not necessarily a development team, but, you know, they are the ones to oversee all Pokemon products. So pretty much from the start, you know, all the Pokemon games have, you know, the Pokemon Company's involvement, as well as, you know, all of the various media franchises that Pokemon has its feet or paws in, or flippers or tentacles or wings. Pokeballs.
Excellent. All right. Anything else to say about the Pokemon Company?
Nope.
All right. Well, then, let's start with our first sidebar. This is actually going to be a little bit of an interesting one because this is a newly formed partnership. You may recall we've talked about DNA. They are a Japanese provider of mobile portal and e-commerce websites based in Japan. They own the Mobage platform, most commonly used in Japan by cell phone games.
I get it. Like mobile games. Mobage.
Did you not realize that?
For some reason, I always read that as Mobage.
Oh, well, it does kind of look like Mobage. I mean, let's be clear here. If you're reading it from, like, the perspective of an English speaker, it looks like mobage. Either way, you know, Nintendo ended up buying like 10% of DNA. Nintendo gave DNA like 1.24% of Nintendo. So, you know, they have some real money invested in each other now, which is something that's a little interesting to me that we didn't see necessarily in a lot of these other partnerships and relationships Nintendo has with these other studios, is that DNA also bought into Nintendo a little bit. So, you know, moving forward, we're going to see DNA taking care of the business side and tech side of Nintendo's online presence. And considering they are literally, like, the biggest mobile gaming platform and e-commerce websites in all of Japan, that actually, to me, potentially puts Nintendo in a very advantageous position moving forward with their online efforts.
Indeed.
Before we really see that come to fruition, however, we do have their slate of several mobile games that will be Nintendo branded that should be releasing over the next year. The first of which, of course, is the
Miitomo
game, which appears to be Tomodachi Life meets Miis. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how this pans out things with DNA, but it's definitely, to me, very clear that Nintendo is very serious about online this time. I don't think the NX, in terms of online functionality, is going to be anything to fuck with. Like, I think it's going to be a real winner, truly.
Yeah, and DNA worked on Final Fantasy Record Keeper, right?
Yes, they did, as well as many, many other games. I mean, literally, we can't even list their games because...
But, you know, Record Keeper being very, very well-liked.
Oh, yeah, no, it's huge, but they've done so many games. You know, they worked on the Japanese release of Goddess. They did Rage of Bahamut, which was huge back in the day in the mobile platform. I mean, they've had just so many games over the years. And that's not even looking at Mobage that they do, which means they have their finger in the pie of basically every popular Japanese mobile game that has ever been. So, can't really understate just how valuable that partnership could be moving forward.
Indeed.
The other sidebar here is I want to talk about a couple of partner studios with whom Nintendo no longer works.
Yes.
And I'm going to just sort of go down the list here. The first one, of course, is Radical Entertainment. Radical is now owned outright by Activision Blizzard, but for a time they worked with Nintendo for some of their SNES Mario spinoffs, the ones that, you know,
educational.
The edutainment games that we slagged off pretty hard back on our Mario episode. Stuff like Mario's Is Missing and Mario's Time Machine. The bigger one, of course, is Rareware, who is now owned by Microsoft Studios.
Yep.
They worked with Nintendo on games such as Donkey Kong Country, GoldenEye 007, Star Fox Adventures, Diddy Kong Racing, Donkey Kong 64, Conker's Bad Fur Day, Banjo-Kazooie, Diddy Kong Racing DS, and Perfect Dark. You know, they obviously had a very lengthy partnership that, at the time at least, was mutually very agreeable.
Yeah.
So it's always been interesting that Microsoft ended up getting them from Nintendo, but, you know, as we've said, and we talked about this in quite some amount of detail in our Rareware episode, was that episode 50?
I think so, wow.
Holy moly. Ultimately, I think that everyone can agree now, at least, that Nintendo kind of came out ahead there.
Mm-hmm.
So, we also, of course, have Silicon Knights.
Oh, boy.
Who, you know, Nintendo no longer really works with because they don't really exist anymore. But, you know, they worked with Nintendo on Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem, Metal Gear Solid, The Twin Snakes, and some assorted smaller work for a couple of games, as I understand it. And, you know, it was really interesting. They ended up also partnering with Microsoft Game Studios for what was supposed to be the Too Human trilogy. And even when they went off on this tangent, Nintendo actually still owned a fair amount of stock in the company. Then they ended up releasing the incredibly lackluster X-Men Destiny game. Obviously hurts my heart that game was so bad, and it absolutely flopped, and due to a number of lawsuits that were filed both by and against Silicon Knights, the studio no longer exists. We also, of course, had Flagship. Flagship was a independent Japanese game developer. It was actually funded by a trifecta of Capcom, Nintendo, and Sega. They still do work on Nintendo games to some degree, as I understand, but they've mostly been absorbed fully into Capcom. You would know them for their work on the Legend of Zelda Oracles games, as well as the Minish Cap, Kirby and the Amazing Mirror, and Kirby Squeak Squad, both of which they developed in tandem with HAL Laboratory. And the last one that I'd like to talk about here is Factor 5. And the reason they're the last ones I want to talk about is that they had a tremendous impact on Nintendo hardware in a way that I think most people don't really realize. So Factor 5 is probably best known for the Star Wars Rogue Squadron games that released on the Nintendo 64 and Nintendo GameCube platforms. But something that's really interesting is that they were formed in 1987, but they came to North America and ended up opening an office here in 1997. They originally came from Cologne, Germany, but they ended up also in San Rafael, California, which is super local to Game Buoy Studios. They're just incredible from a tech perspective. They were absolutely fantastic. They were the ones that made the compression codecs that allowed like full FMV games to come to Nintendo 64, stuff like the Resident Evil 2 port on Nintendo 64. So they were just really absolutely incredible developers. What they were doing on the GameCube for Rogue Squadron 2 and 3 is just, to this day, it's absolutely incredible. Like, those games do not look like GameCube games. They looked like PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 games. Like, these guys were masters. Unfortunately, things ended up not going super well for them over time. They ended up closing completely in 2011 due to the closure of Brash Entertainment. Brash Entertainment was a video game publisher focused on licensed games. Factor 5 was working on several licensed games for them when they closed, and, you know, they never got paid. So they ended up without any operating funds and had to go. Unfortunately, in the last era of consoles, that is to say the last console generation, they were probably most well known for the PlayStation 3 release flop Lair. I call it a flop because it's not well liked due to the fact that it ended up being turned into a motion control game. But once they patched in the physical controls, it actually turned out to be a really good game. It was, to me, befitting of their legacy. They were just fantastic developers, and it's, to me, still a shame they're not still working with Nintendo. I wish they still existed and were working closely with Nintendo the way they worked with Nintendo in the N64 and GameCube eras. I think everybody would have won from that. Saigi, are there any other defunct partner studios or partnerships you'd like to talk about?
I mean, we kind of talked about Hudson Soft a little bit. Their story is just kind of sad because, you know, Hudson Soft has a long history. We might have to do a Hudson Buoy or a Hudson Micro or something. But basically, they ended up being completely absorbed into Konami and, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
something
that
was
says
really
it.
Cool. I mean, we're not really talking about third party, but they were the first third party partnership that I'm aware of that Nintendo had back in the Famicom days.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, like I said, this is more meant to be like, you know, subsidiaries and, you know, partner studios more than just, you know, a third party sort of thing. But just the Hudson Soft story is kind of sad.
All right. Well, then let's wrap this conversation up, Slaggy. What was the question of the week that you asked this week?
This week we talk about Nintendo subsidiaries and partner studios. Do you have a favorite? And over on Facebook, we said, in a dream world, what game studio would you want to become a Nintendo subsidiary? We've got a response over there on Facebook from Nandias, Game Buoy Superfans, in regards to the first question, saying, I can't think of any. Rather than doing a Google search, I'll have to wait to hear it from you guys. So if Slack kicks reading this, I've been saying, oh, duh, the whole episode. As for the bonus question, I was going to say Rare, but since I have a gap in my Nintendo experiences from SNES to late GameCube era, I looked it up. So I'd say Media Molecule or that game company. They've both done a lot with novel concepts and have largely been successful at it. Maybe if Little Big Planet was under the wing of Nintendo, the controls would be a little better. And if Nintendo could learn a few things from them on user-generated content curating, that game company would have done some interesting things with a detached controller with a screen. I have no idea what. If I did, I would have been working with them. And your enzyme over on Twitter saying, Monolith Soft, duh, anything else is wrong. So presumably your enzyme's enjoying Xenoblade Chronicles X over there.
I'm pretty sure he's probably still playing Fallout.
Oh, well, all right then. So with that, I think it's time to move on.
Actually, I'd like to hear from you, Slaggy. Why don't you answer those questions?
Oh, well, gosh, that's just such a hard choice. I mean, we obviously talked about intelligent systems, HAL Laboratory, Retro Studios, Game Freak. I mean, those four really being huge. I mean, but I mean, I probably got to go with HAL. You know, I've got to go to HAL.
Goes to Hades.
I mean, I, as we talked about on the Kirby games episode, I love the Kirby series. You know, I love Smash, and you know, just such a gem of a studio. But like we've talked about, a lot of really quality studios here. What about you, Captain Spike?
For me, hands down, Intelligent Systems is my favorite. You know, I've already talked about this here. You probably heard me ranting and raving. I love the Wars series. I love the Paper Mario series. I love Fire Emblem. I love everything they've done, basically. And, you know, it's always interesting to me when I look at the actual list of what they've done. It's always like, holy moly, this entire list is games I love. Like, literally. So, they definitely get my vote. If I could pick a studio for, you know, like, an ideal studio to get with Nintendo.
Oh, I didn't answer that one.
I'm just going to say Level 5.
Oh, yeah.
I would love if Level 5 and Nintendo took it to the next level.
Level 6?
I think that Level 5, and you know, we've talked about this previously when there were those rumors going around about one of the Level 5 creatives taking over at Nintendo after Kimishima-san takes his leave as company president.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that the DNA of Nintendo and the DNA of Level 5 is
very,
very...
What about the DNA of DNA?
Is very compatible, and I think that both companies would really gain a lot from that. I think that Level 5 could use some brand management lessons, but, you know, Nintendo could learn a little bit about experimenting even further outside of the box than we typically see them doing. So,
yeah,
I think it would be mutually beneficial.
I totally agree. Level 5, there's no better partner for them.
All right, well, all of that having been said, then let's...
Konami, no, just kidding.
Let's start up the wind down. And let's
With
be clear.
Up.
Let's be clear. I would totally support a Nintendo-Capcom long-term partnership.
I think Konami.
Oh, I heard Capcom. Konami's too far gone at this point.
Nintendo
should just buy Castlevania from them and forget they ever existed.
Yep.
All right, yeah. So, what's up?
I said, hey, what's going on?
So I have been playing Final Fantasy VI recently. Or not VI, IX.
I've been
playing Final Fantasy IX recently.
Oh, a little of a downgrade, but...
I'm actually enjoying it a lot. You know, I have a really weird relationship with Final Fantasy IX, but it's really working for me this playthrough. I actually think I might get all the way through it on my replay, which... A lot of times I'll start a replay, I'll get like to like the really good part, and then I'll finish it and be like, okay, well, I don't really need to finish this. Like, I've done the good part.
Yeah.
And you know, that could happen with 9, but right now, like, I've been playing it for like a week. I've already got like 8 hours in, and for me, that's a lot, because I play so many games in any given week that I usually only get, you know, 2 or 3 hours into any individual of them given a week.
Yeah.
So I've really prioritized playing that, and it's been a lot of fun. What about you, Slaggy? What have you been playing?
Well, you know, after coming back from the long holiday, and, you know, not having as much time to game because, you know, I was spending it with family and friends, I picked Destiny back up. I have Destiny the Taken King now. I haven't really been able to experience the Taken King content yet, but, you know, definitely excited. I used the boost to boost a hunter up to level 25, and really love the way that hunter feels. Looking forward to, you know, continuing on my Titan, and also made a little warlock as well, and was really, because I had tried a warlock at first before I rolled Titan, and was really surprised that now that I know understand the game a little bit, that I was doing a lot better with warlock. So definitely
awesome.
Looking forward to playing all three of those. Gonna definitely, you know, continue leveling my Titan with you, and on my own time, work on my hunter, and then, you know, just kind of have my warlock coming up whenever I need a break. So, you know, definitely 100% aboard the Titan train.
Destiny train?
The Destiny train, which, you know, ironically was probably what Titan from Blizzard was going to be a lot like. But the Titan train on Destiny. And I've also been playing Undertale, and that's been a trip. I'd heard a lot about it, and so, you know, I was aware of the different, how do we say, morality systems, if that's not being too spoilery. So I kind of, you know, I knew about that from all the publicity the game has got. So, I am working on I almost wanted to call it Paragon, a pacifist playthrough of that game, and it's just so weird. I mean, it gets a lot of comparisons to, you know, the Mother series, which I could see, you know, it's definitely got that quirkiness, but just, like, so weird, but really clever writing and surprising amount of feels, but also just really weird. So highly suggested if you like JRPGs with random bullet hell elements during the battles.
Yeah, it is such a fantastic game. I don't like to talk about it really at all, but it's just a fantastic experience, and I'm happy that you're playing it.
And if anyone has had an encounter with Lesser Dog in the game, please talk to me so we can LOL over that.
And this is still your first playthrough?
Yes.
I will be interested and what you have to say about it after your third.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot about the, you know, the depth of this game that, you
well,
know.
Well, the less you know, the better, so let's stop talking.
Yeah. All right, well, I have a few more social links, so unless you've been playing anything else, I want to catch up on these tweets.
Nope, let's get those twiddly tweets out.
A lot of them having to do with Animal Crossing, which we talked about last time, you know, over the holiday season.
Son of a gun.
Oh, come on.
Keep moving forward. No, it's only son of a gun because I said no one likes it, and it turns out a lot of people like it.
Yeah,
that's
Little
all.
Daddy's Pizza
that's all.
Little Daddy's Pizza says, sorry, but you have at least one Animal Crossing fan in your midst. I'm a longtime fan of the concept, but it wasn't until New Leaf that the game really matched my expectations. But then goes on to continue, the hardcore schedule of needing to play about 1 hour, but no more every single day feels antithetical to the premise. It should be addressed along with not being so totally punished for gaps in play. Let me experience it casually, please. But I also love The Sims and virtual pets, so. And then you jumped in and said you agreed about, like, the being so restrictive. Gamer Fox has a good idea about how the game could improve, saying timers for flowers dying, bugs in house, villagers moving in and out, etc. shouldn't tick unless you log in. That's a smart one. And then continues, my poor roses I worked so hard on all wilted and died during my absence. That makes me so sad. I want to give you a hug. Little Daddy's Pizza continued, if Harvest Moon and Animal Crossing had a baby, I'd be set for life. And saying, you know, not in like shearing your neighbors and taking their eggs away, but make it a functioning town. Give us something to do in real time other than catch beetles. And then that retro code has a very, I would say it is a very sweet tweet. He said, just heard the Animal Crossing episode and wanted to say I love the Animal Crossing series. It's become my mom's favorite series besides Mario, and she has mastered these games inside out. Aww, that is so cute. Now I just want to hear, like, about that RetroCode's mom being like, oh, Fluffy sent me a letter today. So, that RetroCode's mom, if you happen to be listening, we'd love to hear your Animal Crossing stories because it sounds adorable. Just the fact that you're a mom who loves Animal Crossing.
Are you done with the social links?
I am done with the social links.
I ask because while we were recording, a major piece of news just broke,
and oh
my gosh,
I
want to talk about it. Apparently, according to IGN, who has spoken with Square, and the official press release about the Final Fantasy Remake trailer, Final Fantasy VII Remake will be told across a multi-part series with each entry providing its own unique experience.
What?
Which IGN is interpreting as Final Fantasy VII Remake is going to be an episodic experience.
Huh.
So, already fan reaction all across Twitter and other social media is quite fascinating. We have a lot of people who are, you know, basically saying, you know, it's a JRPG. There's no reason for this to be episodic unless you're trying to milk fans of money for multiple releases. A lot of people are wondering if this means we're just going to have, like, smaller, like, almost mini game style experiences with each part of the game's story. Some people are talking about, you know, maybe they're just talking about side stories, like multi-part series, meaning they're also going to remake
Crisis Core,
you know, Before Crisis, etc. We don't really know a whole lot about what this really means, multi-part experience, but the fact that each entry will be providing its own unique experience is pretty fascinating.
I almost wonder if it's like telling the story of Final Fantasy VII, you know, just the core game, but like with this part of the game is going to have this type of battle system. This part of the game is going to be like this to suit this part of the game.
Well, and you know, Takashi Mochizuki-san from Wall Street Journal actually spoke to people from Square Enix, and they told him that Square Enix said that the FF7 remake's data size will be so huge that it will by necessity need to be split up into several titles, and that while the basic story scenario will remain the same, they do plan on adding new scene additions to the game.
Oh, wow. So I wonder if that means that, like, each disc of the game is going to be, like, a full JRPG 40 hours or something.
How crazy would that be?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've been saying...
Everyone would die.
We've all been saying, you know, this game is, miraculously, like, way further along in the development than we thought. If it really is going to be smaller episodic experiences, we could have the first one on our consoles a heck of a lot sooner than we're expecting.
That's true.
So this is definitely a developing story. Expect to hear us talk about it a lot more in future weeks. And otherwise, let's get back to the wrap-up.
Yep, so we're going to wrap it up here. We love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your listenership on Stitcher Radio. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
Yes, we do. You can always email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org. And all of our complete episode archive of all 99 of these puppies are over at gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
99.
Luftballoons.
Give us some shout-outs.
As ever and always, my first shout-out goes out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd be remiss not to mention Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin. You should also check out their lovely sister show, X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants, as well as our sister show, Reading is Fundamental, which Slagkick here helms and features as first mates and whatever have you, myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness. You should also check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, and Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, take us a place.
I'm going to take you to a game bar! I shouldn't do that again. But Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, a group of our fellow queer video game podcasters that includes Koopa Club, an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist, Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them, and our LGBT cuties. And La Palanca podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. I'd also like to shout out to the Voice of Geeks Network, which has shows such as Orange Lounge Radio, Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, and Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. VogNetwork.com, that's Voice of Geeks Network, is a great place for all of your geek needs. And if you are a fan of the animes, then you might want to check out a little show called Anime Buoy, your protocol for anime recommendations and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. And if that sounds familiar, it's because it's our new sister show.
Thank you ever so much, our lovely and beautiful listeners out there in Internet Radio Land. I hope you've had even half as much fun listening to us as we've had talking to you tonight. Thank you for spending this lovely Sunday evening with us. We really appreciate it. We're going to be taking a couple of weeks off, both because December is very busy and because we have some big stuff planned for episode 100 coming up toward the end of the month.
God.
I will let you in on the fact that we are tentatively hoping to do a live episode for our 2015 wrap-up. You can find details when we're ready to release them over on our social media feeds, and hopefully you will be able to take a little bit of time out of your week, 1 week, to join us in real time and comment on the year that was, as we comment on, you know, how it went for us.
Oh my God.
Until then, though, keep gaming, keep thinking, and the art of drowning.
December Underground.
Mics are hot. Mics are hot.
Hot mics. Hot mics.
All right. I'm your host. First.
Ah!
Copy pasta error. All right. That's it. That's a wrap.